You did this?
No, I was just checking. Yes, I did. Yes, yes.
Why won't you like him?
What is there to like? He's just... he's a weird little skeevy guy with no waist. Why do you care whether we like him or not?
I care if you like him.
Why? I'm not your father. All right.
Okay.
Go to your room.
What?
Go to your room, young lady.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan Weiss here with you once again. Before we get into everything, the brutal loss to the Cardinals, we got to take care of the housekeeping. So first things first, you can follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN, follow Weiss at NYG Daily, follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. If we're not on your favorite app, let us know. We'll get on up there. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, rate us 5 stars. Leave us a kind review. All right. A lot to discuss this week. And one thing that I realized, actually, not too long before we hopped on Skype to record this episode, is I feel like, for the most part, over the last, call it 2 seasons, most of our episodes, while yes, we do discuss the game, we probably haven't been going as in-depth into the individual games as we can be, or maybe even should be, because that's just how broken the process is as it pertains to the New York Giants, even before 2018 and the disaster that that offseason was. The process for this team is just broken, and it reared its ugly head again, and just perfection against the Cardinals this past week. And it really starts with the offense and just how broken the offense is. We'll get into that spectacularly. But we are, 15 weeks into the season, or will be 15 weeks into the season this coming weekend, and we have way more questions than answers about this Giants team, about the coaching staff, namely Jason Garrett, about who is going to be calling the shots in the offseason, whether it be Joe Judge wielding his power, or if Dave Gettleman is going to still be around, or if some of these reports are true, a la Albert Breer, whether someone like Monty Ossenfort, is going to be involved in the Giants in some capacity, and of course the quarterback position, all of which are now once again hot topics of conversation amongst Giants fans. So Weiss, I throw it to you. Let's start specifically with the Cardinals game, because a lot of the issues that we go on to discuss are broader issues that will be discussed over the next 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if anything, the Arizona game told us that, you know, this is still an ongoing process. The Giants are not fully arrived yet, right? There's still a lot of work that needs to be done. There's still a lot of questions that need to be answered as well. But offensively, I mean, that's where it starts and that's where it ends with this Giant team. I mean, there's 3 things right now with this that are huge question marks right now for the Giants, particularly offensively, that we probably won't know the answer to by the end of the season, but it's really an alarming thing right now. Number one, and most importantly, the quarterback. Now, regardless how you feel about Daniel Jones, regardless how much leeway you have with him, how much confidence you have with him, I don't think anybody can say that Daniel Jones has gotten better this year. We can talk about whether he's regressed or whether he's, you know, made enough strides or whether he stayed the same. We can talk about that. But nobody says he's gotten better. And a lot of that could be because the offense, and we go to Jason Garrett. Look, I understand the Giants lack talent on offense, specifically at the skill position. I understand they lost their only real offensive playmaker, the game changer in Saquon Barkley. I get all that. But they still have enough pieces where the offense shouldn't be what it is right now. Like, I feel like...
these are professionals. We're not talking about CJ Board starting as wide receiver 1.
Right.
Right? We have an offense that has Golden Tate, And I am on the record. I am not a Golden Tate fan.
No.
I don't like his play style. I don't like his personality as a professional player. But he has been a productive wide receiver numerous times throughout his career in numerous different offenses.
Last year.
Even last year. Sterling Shepard, a second-round pick. Not a bum at all. Plagued by injuries. But when he's on the field, we know that he can make a play.
Evan Engram. He's a slot receiver.
Great slot receiver. Evan Engram, who is somewhat of a hot topic among Giants fans. Say what you want about him. The guy has some sort of skill, just can't put it together. Wayne Gallman, bottom line, to your point, this is not a bunch of scrubs that the Giants are throwing out there at the skill positions.
These are not practice squad players that are playing
You
know, receiver for the Giants. These are capable players. And it's pretty much the same receivers. It is the same receiver as last year. Darius Slayton, we thought, was a special player last year. He had a great rookie year. We thought that was going to continue. It hasn't continued. And it goes back to the offense. It goes back to Jason Garrett. And I talked about this, I think, earlier in the week after Sunday, is that I just don't see how you can bring Jason Garrett back. I just want to throw out there some things. Like, right now, the Giants, in terms of total yards per game, they're 31st. Only the Jets are worse.
Mm-hmm.
They are 32nd in total yards per game, only behind the New York Jets. Passing, they're 31st. They're only throwing for 183 yards per game in today's NFL. That's I don't understand how bad you can be. You're only averaging.
It's almost impossible in the modern day NFL. The Giants are one of only three teams that have failed to score 30 offensive points.
Yes. And then you look at points per game, they're 32nd. So by every metric except running the football, this is a bottom five offense. And the only reason it's not dead last is because the New York Jets exist, or else the Giants would be 32nd. And all these things, and you look at where the league is now, this is all an alarming issue as a fan, where it's like, look, I know I don't have talent, and we'll talk about, you know, the general manager in a second, but there is enough there for this offense to still be a capable offense, because even though they lost Saquon, they're still able to run the football, right? You went out and you signed Deion Lewis. Like, obviously Wayne Gallman is producing well for the Giants in terms of how Saquon was. Like, he's averaging 4.8 yards per carry. He is the offensive, the running game is producing, right? And he's not a pass catcher like Saquon is out of the backfield, but you have a Deion Lewis. You brought him in for that purpose. But it just seems like Jason Garrett's not playing to his player's strengths. Route concepts are a big problem. I mean, it's just so, it's nonchalant, it's not creative. It's almost like the defense, it's easy to prepare for the Giants offense because you know essentially what's coming to you. It's a lot of simple route concepts, a lot of stuff that's predictable underneath.
And to your point, just real quick, this is a direct quote from Nick Gates. Said that the Cardinals ran a 4-4 heavy package with four linemen and four linebackers, and the Giants were completely unprepared for it.
No.
One, that's just completely unacceptable. And two, it goes to the point that, one, this offense is entirely predictable. And two, they came into that game, the Cardinals, with the game plan, we are going to make Daniel Jones beat us.
Right.
And they were right, because not only could he not beat them, the offense and the game plan wasn't schemed to take any deep shots. It's embarrassing. We'll talk about Daniel Jones and his turnover problems and his lack of progression in year two. But to your point about Jason Garrett and the scheming, the Giants, they don't take any deep shots.
No.
Daniel Jones has only attempted deep shots on 8.4% of his pass attempts.
And like you said,
among 41,
it's not just this game. It's been this entire year.
Among 41 quarterbacks with at least 100 pass attempts, only 7 have fewer deep pass attempts. And that's bad, because Daniel Jones has a 140.6 passer rating on those throws, which is excellent.
Yes.
And it was one of the main criticisms of him coming out of college, was his ability to throw the ball deep. And we saw last year that he does have that ability. They're just not taking advantage of that.
No. And that's a problem. It's a problem when you're not playing to your player's strengths. I talked about this as well. I tweeted up. If you're a coach, specifically on offense, and you're calling plays, your offense, your play design should go to what favors your players, to what their strengths are, not what their weaknesses are. But it seems like Jason Garrett, you know, and I sort of saw this coming, because if you look at Jason Garrett's time in Dallas, he had a lot of very good players, a very good, capable quarterback, a very good, capable offensive line, running game, tight end, receivers. But it always seemed like the offense was not as productive as it should have been, right, to match the
I don't think that there's been a coach in recent history that has achieved less with more than Jason Garrett did as the head coach of the Cowboys.
And here with the Giants, where you don't have those established players, you don't have those great players, right? You're asking him to develop young guys, young quarterback, young receivers. It's just not happening, and it's a problem. And to me, these are all signs of a guy that should be one and done. I mean, I just don't know how you can bring this guy back. Every avenue that you take and you look at, okay, has Jason Garrett done a good job here, 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 except running the football and the improvement of the offensive line as a whole, you know, as the season went along? The answer is no. Like, Daniel Jones has not gotten better. I think he's gotten worse. The receiving corps has not gotten better. Darius Slayton has not gotten better. Golden Tate is not playing as he was last year. Sterling Shepard is not as good as he was last year. This is all a problem, and this is all signs of a coach that I think needs to be one and done. It needs to happen. I just don't see how you can justify bringing him back. If there's one thing that you can point to and say, this is the reason why we bring Jason Garrett back, I just don't see it. And I just don't know how you can bring him back for another year.
Yep. A few more stats on the game. This is specifically this week, week 14. This is from Justin Penick and Next Gen Stats. Justin, Bobby Skinner's co-host. Great name.
Great name, yeah.
Great name.
Justin's a good guy, too.
Justin's a great guy. Love Justin.
Yeah.
The Giants had an expected completion percentage of 55.2% in week 14, last in the NFL. 33.3% of their throws were into tight windows, which is second highest in the NFL. And the kicker, they had the second most time to throw, 2.97 seconds. Average separation, 1.53 yards, well below the league average of 2.86. That bundle of stats right there just encapsulates everything that's wrong with this offense, from Jason Garrett to the quarterback, everything.
To the talent.
To the talent.
It's just not good enough. And no. The offense, look, with the quarterback, and I think we'll go into it about Daniel Jones. Look, I understand things around him aren't good. And, you know, he doesn't have – the receivers are not getting open. They're not getting any separation. You just mentioned that stat. But I just said – like I said at the start of the show, he just hasn't gotten better. He hasn't made those strides. And I think he's regressed, and I think you'll agree with me that he's gotten worse than last year. And that's a problem for the Giants, because a lot of whether or not the Giants are headed in the right direction, when we ask that question a lot, it's very reliant on whether or not Daniel Jones has gotten better, and he hasn't. And his turnovers are still a problem. We can put the interceptions to the side for now, right? Let's focus strictly on the fumbles. The man gets hit and drops the ball like 80% of the time. Like he lost one fumble, but it seems like a couple times in that game he gets hit, the ball is loose. And while he recovers, it's still like, man, like, hold on to the football. And the fumble problem is still here, in my opinion. It's still an issue. The pocket awareness is still a problem. And overall turnovers, it's still an issue. And to me, when you have a quarterback that is turning the ball over at the rate that he is, that's not a franchise quarterback.
And no.
I say it all the time, if you exit a season and you cannot definitively answer whether or not you have your franchise quarterback, then you need to be looking at other quarterbacks, whether it's free agency or the draft, because it is the most important position. And the production that the Giants are getting out of Daniel Jones right now, the development, it's all not enough right now for the Giants to feel comfortable or be comfortable. And if they think they are, and if fans think they are, they're just simply lying to themselves, because you see it every week. Guy has not gotten better. All of the issues that were there last year are still there, and even then some. So,
and what makes it bad is, and this is where I have a lot of thoughts.
Yeah.
And it's tough. It's really tough to organize them. So when we had Jordan on,
yes,
Jordan said, and he has said repeatedly to us outside of the podcast, that Joe Judge is a straight shooter and one of the most honest head coaches that he has ever spoken to or worked with as a journalist. Pretty much everyone assumed that, okay, the Giants are in the hunt. Regardless of whether or not he's 100%, Daniel Jones is coming back and he's going to play in this football game, right? Because, I mean, this is really no question. A lot of people try to make this argument, and I don't know if they're being facetious or not. Daniel Jones is a better quarterback than Colt McCoy. Yes. I mean, it is no question.
Yes, yes.
To me, Daniel Jones did not look 100% against the Cardinals. Joe Judge insists otherwise. And if Daniel Jones plays this upcoming week, I think it's fair to assume that, yeah, he's healthy, because it would be incredibly irresponsible for the head coach and the offensive coordinator to put their quarterback in that situation again if he's not 100%. Now, if the game plan did not call for Daniel Jones to improvise with his legs at all, or even any sort of designed runs, don't you think it would be top of mind if he is going to be sitting back in the pocket for 2.97 seconds, like I just mentioned, second highest in the league in week 14, that he would be extra conscious of where his protection is, who's breathing down his neck, and make an extra effort to hold on to the football if he got hit? Now, to me, the fact that, let's just say, for argument's sake, he was not 100% healthy, and he knew, okay, I can't run if I were to get out of the pocket. That, to me, that makes it worse that he fumbled the football as many times as he did, because he knew that he didn't have an escape route. If he got hit, or if he felt any sort of contact, and listen, I'll give him, of course, the benefit of the doubt on that first sack where Marcus Golden came unblocked screaming off the edge. Sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
But the ball still came loose two other times. And if you know that you don't have the ability to use your legs, you need to be holding on to that football for dear life, especially in a game where you know that the opposing offense, it can be explosive. Kyler Murray, DeAndre Hopkins, Kenyon Drake, they got some playmakers. Christian Kirk, you know that if you turn the ball over in your own territory or at all, that can lead to 7 points. And we can say, we could talk about the fumble issues until the cows come home. The fact that it was as bad as it was last week in as a game as important as that one, where the Giants are basically playing for the division, and two, if he knows that he's not going to be able to make any moves and escape the pocket using his legs, to me, that's egregious. You have to have that at the top of your mind. Hold on to the football at all costs. And the fact that he didn't do that, to me, that's just, it's unacceptable. And we're going to talk about what the Giants should do at the quarterback position moving forward. I know everyone listening to this podcast probably just watched Baker Mayfield and Lamar Jackson go head to head on Monday Night Football in what was easily the game of the year. You can't tell me with a serious face that you're going to look at how those two teams can perform, both of which have playoff hopes, even more than playoff hopes. These two teams are top of mind. We're going to make a run at this Super Bowl. We have the talent. We've built properly. The Ravens were almost there last year. The Browns have finally figured it out. Kevin Stefanski has done an unbelievable job both in scheme and developing his personnel. I mean, these two teams are looking at the Giants and licking their lips. And they're looking at Daniel Jones, who's may or may not be 100% healthy, who's got all these turnover problems, and they're saying, yeah, you know what? Neither of our defenses played particularly well on Monday night. We're going to get after this guy, and we're going to make him pay. And the most frustrating thing for me, it's a mental illness within the Giants fan base, is that as soon as the guy puts on a Giants jersey, he gets defended to no end, whether or not you believed in him during the draft process and the pre-draft process. you put Daniel Jones in this upcoming draft class, you can't tell me that there are not three or four guys that you would probably take instead of him. And if the Giants are going to be picking in the top 10 like we expect them to, and there are two teams picking one and two, the Jets and the Jaguars, who are going to be looking for future quarterbacks, and then after that, it gets a little precarious. What are the Falcons going to do? Are the 49ers going to try to make a move and move up? Are the Vikings going to draft someone to maybe develop behind Kirk Cousins a little bit? There are a lot of question marks. And we're really going to see, based on Dave Gettleman's position in this organization moving forward, and really how much power Joe Judge wields this upcoming offseason, because you can't tell me that he's satisfied with what's going on, both as his offensive coordinator and at the quarterback position, because you can do better. We know that the Giants can get a better quarterback, be it in free agency or in the draft. And listen, there's a lot of question marks, and to me, there are so many guys in this draft. I truly believe this is another very, very good quarterback draft. And it's funny, I was thinking about it today. The 2018 draft class had a lot of hype. There are some guys in that class that developed into true franchise quarterbacks. We're seeing Baker take that leap this year. Lamar Jackson, obviously. Josh Allen has turned into an absolute stud. I feel like this quarterback class could be as good, if not better, and is not being given the hype that the 2018 class was given. So we're going to learn a lot about Giants team and the offense over the next few weeks, but we're going to learn even more about what their true beliefs are about this offense and this quarterback as soon as the season ends. And to me, it's a big point of anxiety, because I mean, I'm looking at guys like Zach Wilson out of BYU, and I'm like, oh, wow, you know, this guy has some of the best characteristics of some of the top quarterbacks in this league. And given the right situation and the right coaching, he could really develop to be something special. I mean, Trevor Lawrence, obviously, but he's a goner. A lot of people seem to be high on Justin Fields. Me, not so much. Trey Lance, Kyle Trask. Listen, it's going to be a pretty loaded quarterback class. A lot of teams are going to be either taking quarterbacks to start day one of the 2021 season. Some, like the Falcons, you know, they're not going to be able to move on from a Matt Ryan, but they're going to want to pick a guy that they can sit, develop until they can move on. And my biggest fear is that we're in this dance for another 2 or 3 years, because we're like, oh, you know what, let's give this guy another shot when it may or may not be deserved.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, you guys know my stance. I'm not going to continue to repeat it when it comes to the quarterback. If you can't answer it, it's a problem. And right now,
I mean, this guy's putting up Sam Darnold numbers. If this guy is on the Jets, the Giants fan base is ripping him every single week, regardless of his receivers, his coordinator, his offensive line. Take off the blinders, guys. Yeah. Please.
We can talk about the interceptions. I know a lot of it, some of them wasn't his fault, but only 8 passing touchdowns. And I know Jason Garrett doesn't help. I know talent offensively is not there. But look, you can't sit here with a straight face and tell me Daniel Jones has gotten better from year one to year two. And I think we can all make a legitimate argument that he's actually regressed. Now, why that is, there's a plethora of reasons, but
it's not all on him. I think we can all agree on that. I mean, Jason Garrett's been atrocious.
Yeah. I mean, you're not playing to your player's strengths. And, you know, I know we'll have plenty of time to talk about the draft and the quarterback and what they do. But right now, I'm very confident. Like I said last week, I'm cautiously confident the Giants have found their head coach. I am. I really am. And I don't know how you I don't know if you're as confident as me. I don't know where you stand on Joe Judge.
No, I'm pretty confident.
Yeah, I think we can say we're
not 100%, but I'm very
cautiously confident.
Yes, yes.
There's something there, you know. There's something different about this guy, and when it comes to everything else, I think we're sort of putting our trust in him. We're like, okay, let's see what you do. Let's see how you can build this team, and the quarterback position will be no different. It'll be an interesting conversation, especially if the Giants are picking in the top 10. There's still a chance they might not be, but if they are,
I mean, listen, they're picking 10th right now.
Yes.
They have the Ravens and the Browns. Yes. Switch that order. They got the Browns, the Ravens, and the Cowboys left.
Right.
I think we can say, when we said this about the Seahawks, confidently say that they're probably not going to beat both of those teams. And then whoop-de-doo, here we go again, going into Week 17. What could be a meaningless game if the Washington football team is locked up the division, And then, of course, the Giants are going to go on to win a meaningless game and screw themselves out of a good draft pick.
I still think this division is going to be close to the wire because Washington has offensive problems too. And I know – and they've got a big game against Seattle too. And listen, I know the Giants are struggling right now, but would it completely shock me if they go and they beat Cleveland on Sunday night? No. I'm going to be honest with you. No, I don't. Because I think the Giants can do things that will make it tough for Baker Mayfield. And offensively, this could be a game where I think they could hold Cleveland. Like, it'll be a ground-and-pound game for both sides,
yeah.
limiting what the quarterbacks do throw the ball. And it could be a low-scoring game. And if it's low-scoring, I think the Giants are in it. And I think that they could potentially pull it out. Now, I'm not confident in that. But if you're asking me right now, hey, would you be stunned if the Giants went on Sunday? I'm going to be truthfully honest with you. The answer is no.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think we spoke about it 2 weeks ago, looking at the final stretch of games. I think I said on the podcast, I think that of the final stretch of games, probably the easiest one that I actually expected them to win was last week against the Cardinals, and they got their shit kicked in. So it shows how much I know.
Yeah, I think when we talked about that final, these final stretch of games, I said I think the Giants will finish 7-9, but they'll win of these four. Remember those four games was tough opponents: Seattle, yeah. Arizona, Cleveland, Baltimore. I said they'll win Arizona and Cleveland at home,
right?
And they'll lose the other two. Now I got that order mixed up, but I think that this game for the Giants is essentially, and I know people will say, and I know they could still possibly be in the division, but if they don't beat Cleveland, I don't think they're going to beat Baltimore. And going into the last week, I think given where the division is right now and they're a game out, I think they'll be done unofficially per se. But, ultimately, back to the quarterback, I talked about it last week. This is where we're going to see what Daniel Jones is about. And we talk about the Arizona game and whether he was healthy or not, or should he have played. To me,
should he have played?
No.
Really?
Because here's why. Sure. Here's why.
And I'll say I disagree with you, but go ahead.
Now, you'll understand my point. The confusing part to me is this. If Daniel Jones was healthy, a large part of Daniel Jones' success on the field is with his legs. If he can't move, you're taking away a big part of his game. And to me, what we were seeing is a guy that couldn't move because there was no RPOs, there was no rollouts, there was none of that. So that means that either...
No scrambles.
Yeah, no scrambles, none of that stuff. And if he can't do that, then he shouldn't have played.
Because well, counterpoint, if he can't succeed as a pocket passer in the NFL, what are we doing here?
That's a whole different subject. That's
understood.
You know what I'm saying? That's in terms
that's what we
of
just
game.
Spoke about.
Right. But in terms of this game, if he was not able to do that, like, you don't play. He can't move with his legs, you know, then you can't play him. And I think you shouldn't have played him. And that, to me, goes on the coach. But look, over the course of the next 3 weeks, whether he's healthy or not, we got to see something from Daniel Jones. Like I said, he has to lead this team to the playoffs for me to feel confident about him. And after last week, it seems like he's injured. Like you said, he can't throw from the pocket. And it's that fear in me is growing more, that doubt in me is growing more and more and more. And it's like, man, I want to think that the Giants are finally sort of, there's that light at the end of the tunnel for them, but it just seems like after Sunday, it's back to a lot of questions for me about the state of this franchise.
I mean, yeah, like, bro, everyone, like, I don't know about you, people tweeted me, they're like, oh, you just want Daniel Jones to fail. No, fucking don't, dude.
Absolutely
like,
not.
Do you think that I want to start this whole fucking process over again? No. I want Daniel Jones to go out there, slap me in the face, ball out, prove me wrong, so that the Giants can go out there and draft a Micah Parsons. They can go out there and draft Devontae Smith. They can go out and get playmakers and keep fucking building this roster.
Yes.
But it hasn't been that.
No.
There hasn't been anything to indicate that it should be that way.
No.
For me, like you just said, totally different issue. If he can't be a pure pocket passer for a game where his leg might not be 100%, totally different issue.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is an issue that's as prevalent in the NFL as it is in, say, the NHL, where as soon as the NHL season ends, especially after the playoffs, I mean, some of the stories that come out about the dudes that are playing with injuries and playing through some, like, horrible shit. There's one that sticks out to me. This was, like, this is, like, years ago at this point. There was a story, a quote from Joe Thornton, that when he was in the playoffs, I think he had either a torn meniscus or a torn ACL. And he goes, yeah, it was just sort of floating around in there. When you have a team and you're one of the most important players on that team, as Dan Jones is, and you are making a playoff push, play. You got to play. Because not only are you fighting for the playoffs, but you might be fighting for your future job security. So I totally see where you're coming from like a game planning perspective, where if this quarterback can't use his legs, then just don't play him. But you got to think that Dan Jones, without his running ability, is got to be at least as good as Colt McCoy, who has no running ability as it is. So,
well, he can move a little bit. Colt can move a little bit.
When they ran that designed run with Colt McCoy 2 weeks ago, I almost pissed myself. That was so fucking funny.
What did you used to call Eli Manning in the pocket?
Vanilla Vic.
No, but I know that. But you had a guy that couldn't move. He's a statue in the pocket, right?
He's a tree?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's based like Colt.
Colt McCoy has bricks for feet.
Okay, I mean I think Colt can move a little bit, but yeah, that's my thing with Daniel Jones. I mean, if he can't move with his legs, then it's very tough for me to see him play. But like I said, man, if we'll see what happens this week, whether he practices or not, where he is. They claim that there wasn't a setback and he finished the game fine. And if he practices the way he practiced last week, then he'll play. But if everything is peaches, then
why he just played like shit.
And how come we're not seeing any RPOs? Is Jason Garrett that bad? Like, what's going on here? Where's the disconnect? And I'm just gonna wait and see what happens this week. And I want to say something right before we transition to the next thing. Right, so many Giant fans were so upset after Sunday, rightfully so. I was very upset too, because I really thought they were going to beat the Cardinals. Like they were riding high, a lot of confidence. Young guys were stepping up. I said, they're going to beat the Cardinals, right? I thought that setback game was going to come against Cleveland, but obviously came against Arizona. The Giants, to me, are, in terms of like where they could end up and where they are in a great spot. Right, I think I said this to you last week. If they win games, they're going to win the division, right? Got a playoff game. It's awesome, right? Playoff games are awesome. Have a chance to think. And I think, you know, people are sort of not giving the NFC East winner the respect it deserves. So I think if the NFC East winner wins and they see a team like Seattle again, or maybe even Tampa Bay, I think the Giants could put up a fight against Tampa. I think they could put up a fight against Seattle at home. I mean, they beat Seattle and they should have beat Tampa. So I think they could put up a good fight on there. So, you know, it's not something that's like, oh my God, here we go, we're going to get killed. No, I think, you know, there's some confidence there. If they don't win, it's a likely top 10 pick, right? And it's a likely new GM. I mean, think about it. If the Giants lose next week and they lose against Baltimore, then 6 wins is the most they can get. 6-10, I don't think that saves Dave Gettleman's job.
I'm going to say something, and I'm going to get a lot of shit for it.
Yeah.
If the Giants lose to Cleveland and they lose to Baltimore, effectively what should be eliminating them from the NFC East.
Yeah.
And this is assuming that they are playing for absolutely nothing week 17.
Yeah.
I hope the Cowboys kick the shit out of us. I hope that the Giants go out of this season embarrassed by a Cowboys team that has been just so awful this season, that because the last thing we need is a a Dave Gettleman, what I saw against the Eagles wasn't a mirage type of comment coming from John Mara this time, where he says, oh, well, you know, we beat the Cowboys, we beat the Washington football team twice, we beat the Eagles. You know, there's something here. You know, I'm gonna stick with the status quo. John Mara can absolutely not justify keeping anything the same if they get their fucking ass kicked against the Cowboys.
Here's why I think he can't do that. You ready? Look at the state of the
before you start. Before you start, keep in mind you're talking about an idiot.
Yeah, I know. I got it. I see what you're saying, right? But here's why I think you can't sell that on your fan base, right? Number one, look at the NFC East. Philly, right, gave a quarterback a contract extension. He played so bad. He played so bad that they're already moving on from him before that contract even kicks in. Dallas loses their starting quarterback. Washington, right, who, you know, right now I think is the favorite to win the NFC East, plays three different quarterbacks, one of which, who quite possibly could lead them to the division title, was a guy that hadn't played football in 18 months who had 17 surgeries.
Has half a leg.
Yeah. To me, it's not just the fact that, okay, well, you beat these and you beat Dallas in a meaningless week 17 game. You finally beat Philly after losing to them for so many years. You beat the division champion twice, right? You look at the NFC East, the winner is likely going to have 7 wins or 8 wins. The rest of the NFC East is not going to finish over 500 or at 500. It's hard to say, hey, Dave, I know we're just a year away from overtaking the NFC East when literally the division is so bad. Just look at all that stuff I just mentioned with going on with the other teams, that the Giants in year three with this general manager and this second year quarterback and this in overachieving defense was not able to win the division, even with Saquon Barkley being out for the year. It's hard for John Mara to say, hey, Dave, I'm going to give you another year.
He's an idiot, though.
But remember, the NFL, look, where the NFL is right now with COVID and how this shit is all, you know, next year we expect to have fans in the stands. John Mara has to give this fan base something, some sort of confidence. Right now, the fan base is attached to Joe Judge, right? They're all in. The majority of the fan base is saying they're ready. Like, this is our head coach. We believe in him. So a lot of those fans are saying, you know what? We will have patience for that guy, but we're not going to have patience for the other guy. And as long as the other guy is here, we think he is a impediment to this guy, Joe Judge. So we need this guy gone. So the patience next year, if the team is bad or the team is not fully there yet, is going to be much longer than with Dave Gettleman still here.
The flaw with your entire argument is that you're using logic. That's the problem.
I'm glad I'm glad you got what I was saying.
I 100% agree with what you're saying. What you're saying makes 1,000% sense.
You know, because I'm talking about business and football.
Yes.
You know, as a consumer, if the Giants are bad next year, but they have a new GM, I'm willing to be patient with it, right? Especially if there's a lot of turnover with the offense, I will have more leeway. I'll go to some games in late December if they're meaningless, right? But you have the status quo going on. Even though I got confidence in this coach, I'm not going to games. You know what I'm saying?
So like I know exactly what you're saying. I just it's too logical.
Yeah. So, but I just think that maybe something will click here, and everything that we've heard over the course of the last couple of weeks. And I do think, look, if the Giants don't win Sunday against Cleveland, I think that noise is going to get a little bit louder. We're going to start hearing more and more stuff start to come out about where this franchise is headed in terms of front office structure. I mean, we're already seeing prominent reporters that know a lot of stuff come out and sort of drop hints about what they're hearing about where this franchise could be heading this offseason. And I think it's just going to get louder. I told you, given where they are, they control their destiny in the NFC East. You've proven you can contend with some of the, with Seattle. You can't just you got to win the division. I think you got to show that you've made that next step. I mean, we talked about it before the season. What do we have to see from the Giants? 7 wins, 8 wins, right? 9 wins, right? That was sort of the expectation. Now, I know Saquon was there, but if I would have told you that the Giants was still be, was still going to be able to run the football this effectively without Saquon, would you have believed me? A lot of people yes. would have said no.
I would have.
You would have said yes, but a lot of people would have said, no, I don't think they can be this great of a running team without Saquon. Well, they are. Now win the division.
Let's talk about the division.
Yes. Chase Young is a problem, man.
Of course he is. And,
he's a fucking problem.
And that goes right back to what I was saying about meaningless wins screwing you out of franchise-altering
you know
players.
What's crazy? You know what's crazy? I was telling my younger brother was with me. He's a Baltimore fan. We were watching the Ravens last night. By the way, the Ravens, they win these type of game, one of these games every year. Like every year, it seems like the Ravens win one of these games where it's like fucking crazy. Something crazy happens.
Yeah.
And Justin Tucker ends up kicking a game-winning 55-yard field goal. Like it happens yeah. once a year. But anyways, I was telling him, I said, you know, Chase Young is to me, if I were to rank the top five defensive players in football, I got Aaron Donald. I still think Nick Bosa's too. I know he tore his ACL, but what he did as a rookie was amazing. And then it's Chase Young. And then it's Myles Garrett. And then it's the other Bosa brother with the Chargers.
You're talking specifically pass rushers?
I'm talking overall defensive players.
Okay.
Like, I think the top five.
Pass rushers.
All pass rushers here. Or an Aaron Donald.
Yeah.
Like, I think
Aaron Donald. Who's also a pass rusher. Yeah. He's a pass rusher.
Yeah, I mean, 10-plus sacks a year over the last 4 or 5 years.
He just wrecks the middle of a defense.
I've never seen a guy that big in Chase Young. That fast, long arms, being able to do it. And it's not just him. Montez Sweat is also a very, very good pass rusher, too.
Dude, they built an unbelievable front four.
You know, the Giants could have drafted Montez Sweat, too.
Oh, I know. Yeah, they took Dexter Lawrence instead.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, so, lovely.
But what I was telling them, I said, we talk about meaningless wins late in the season. Do you know in 2018, the Giants won a meaningless game against San Francisco? And one other team, like I think it was Tampa Bay, two meaningless wins that dropped the Giants from 2 to 6. Now, if they would have lost those two games, they would have been picking number 2 overall in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they took a quarterback that year, but I truly believe they would have taken Nick Bosa with the number 2 overall pick. Then the following year, they win a meaningless game in Washington.
Yep.
And fall out of the Chase Young sweepstakes and end up taking Andrew Thomas. So I think it's going to be a good left tackle, but they miss out on this generational pass rusher.
Well, let's not throw generational around just yet.
Sorry. But
franchise altering.
Franchise, oh, I like that. Franchise altering defensive player in Chase Young. He's going to be a problem in this league. I think this dude is. Mike Tomlin, I think, said it best. You know, they don't make guys like that.
You don't want a guy like that in your team because it means you're picking top 3.
Hey,
that's exactly how good they are.
You want to be a guy that inherits that position.
Yeah.
You know, and have that pick. But
yeah.
He's a bad dude, and they got a quarterback in Alex Smith who doesn't turn the football over. You can say
what. But that's the thing, dude. This is say what you want about Ron Rivera. That's a
I'm
team
I believe in Ron Rivera.
I know you're not. I'm very skeptical on him. I know when the Giants were rumored to be looking at him, and I think, you know, you had, yeah.
I was not
thrilled. I wanted someone more young and exciting. And
wasn't even just young and exciting. I think he was benefiting a lot off that 15-1 season.
Sure.
If you take away that 1 year, he's a very mediocre coach. And sure. We could talk about that, you know, but I'm not a believer in
regardless, they have, I mean, they got a star running back in Antonio Gibson. They've got Terry McLaurin, a wide receiver. They've got a very, very good defense. This is a team that is a quarterback, a young franchise quarterback, and maybe another receiver away from being a legitimate contender in the league. I mean, am I wrong?
No, I was telling somebody this. You talk about young. You know, we're both big fans of Aaron Rodgers, right?
Yeah.
Future
New York Giants quarterback Aaron Rodgers, by the way.
Well,
I'll say, do you remember that conspiracy that I had?
Yes. But let me, I'm going to bring it up to you right now.
Okay.
If Aaron Rodgers, after this year, tells Green Bay, hey, go play your young quarterback, I'm out. I mean, could you find a better spot for Aaron Rodgers than Washington?
Oh, I was going to see. No, you're right. I couldn't.
I mean,
what, except for the Giants.
Well, you know, being biased, the Giants. But look at it. Talk about great defense, right? Good running game, offensive line. Established coaching staff.
Yeah.
Right? You're not going to have to worry about the coach doing something crazy to screw you over, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you got a, I think he's a top 10 receiver in Terry McLaurin,
who's climbing might be a chart. Might be a stretch, but he's very good.
Yeah. And you drop Aaron Rodgers into there. What better position, what better spot for Aaron Rodgers if he wants to go somewhere, right?
Like
Washington would be one of those spots. And they could potentially be in position, you know, because they've been able to, you know.
Because if they win the division, they're not going to be in contention for one of these picks unless they want to take a shot on someone like Trey Lance, start Aaron Rodgers, start Alex Smith for another year, get rid of Haskins.
But if you
want
to capitalize on this on this defense that you have now before you start paying them, you can afford to bring Aaron Rodgers' contract on. So that's what scares me about Washington right now is that they, we talk about their quarterback away, and they've sort of been a quarterback away forever. I mean, anytime Washington has a half-decent roster, this is one thing I hear all the time living in D.C. Every time Washington has like a half-decent roster, their quarterback is the quarterback system for them has always been a problem.
Yeah.
Right? Even when they won the Super Bowl with Doug Williams, people still doubted Doug Williams. Like, it's crazy. But it's always been a question mark for them. And everyone has always said they're just a quarterback away, or RG3 just needs to get a little bit better, and they're right there. Putting that thought process of Rodgers coming there, and it scares me a little bit. But their problem, I think, their offense right now is still in air, and Alex Smith is going to be out. They didn't score an offensive touchdown.
And well, they're saying it's a mild calf strain, so he might be back.
Maybe, but I don't know. We'll see. I mean,
goes back to my Daniel Jones point. If you're first place in the division, you need to win these games. Even if you're a little banged up, you're going to try to play.
And I think Washington, their formula is, hey, Alex Smith, don't turn the football over. We're going to run the ball.
We're going to win with passes, our defense.
And we're going to rely on that. When you have a front four, and we as Giants fans, we know that better than anybody else.
Yeah.
When you got four guys that can consistently get to the quarterback, everything else is easier. I was telling somebody this, was a Washington fan. I said, listen, he's like, we just need a corner with safety. I'm like, no, you don't. If you can consistently get there with four, everything else is a lot easier.
Yeah.
You don't need a lockdown corner. You don't need an all-pro linebacker. No. If you can consistently get to the quarterback with a four-man rush like Washington is doing, it makes everything easier. They don't got good corners back there. But because they're able to generate pressure consistently with their front four, it's dangerous. And they have a quarterback that protects the ball, doesn't turn the ball over. They got a tough one against Seattle. But after that, it's Carolina and Philly. So
yeah,
you have to look at them as the favorites right now.
What are your thoughts on the Eagles with Jalen Hurts? I'll say I bet Eagles first half against the Saints. Mm-hmm. I'm a big believer in betting that first half spread when you have a rookie quarterback in, because there's not a lot of tape on him, and chances are that offensive coordinator has the first 20 or so plays for the game already scripted out. Quarterback's got him memorized. As long as he executes, they'll be fine for the start of the game while that defense gets a feel for the quarterback. I did not expect them to win outright. I'm a big fan of Taysom Hill. And
you are? I hate Taysom Hill.
I love Taysom Hill.
I hate Taysom Hill.
I think he's very underrated as a quarterback. Really? I did not expect – I do. I did not expect him
to – Are you joking with me?
No, I'm dead serious. Dude, he played very well in his first two starts.
I actually told somebody, I hate Taysom Hill. But I don't hate Taysom Hill the person. I hate the concept of Taysom Hill.
Okay.
But I was telling somebody, I said, if he's playing like this after the first two games, I said, yo, you got to stick with him, right? Like Drew Brees. It wasn't like Drew Brees was playing, you know, MVP level football. I mean, you got to stick with the hot hand. He's playing well. This isn't a situation with like Brock Osweiler, where Brock Osweiler is just doing all right and you keep painting on the sideline. No, Taysom Hill was actually very comfortable. The offense was excelling. But then after Philly, I just said, you got to go back to Brees.
Well, again, that's like the Eagles have one or two games a year where you just they shouldn't win, and they just do. And that was one of them. I thought it was going to be a few weeks ago. I forget who their opponent was, but I think it was actually the Seahawks. Seattle. Yes, Seahawks. It was the Seahawks. I thought that they were going to win that game, even though they had no business winning it. But, yeah, I mean, it finally happened. I've been asking for weeks, how bad is Jalen Hurts that Carson Wentz is still starting over him? Mm-hmm. And there we go. He played pretty well.
I think I'm not a believer in Jalen Hurts.
Me neither. I don't think that he's the solution, but he's better than Carson Wentz.
He's a spark right now.
Yes.
And maybe they win a couple a game more.
But as a Giants fan, that's exactly the position that you want the Eagles to be in. You want them thinking that Jalen Hurts is the answer.
Right.
You want them sticking with Carson Wentz, Jalen Hurts.
I think we talked about it last week. I think where the Eagles are headed right now is that Jalen Hurts and Carson Wentz are going to have a quarterback battle next year.
Mm-hmm.
In training camp, and then whoever wins.
Yeah.
Unless they get something for Carson Wentz that's worthy of moving him and taking that dead cap.
No shot. But
I think this is where this whole situation is headed. Dallas is an interesting team because their schedule is actually fairly easy. And they're a team that I think could potentially win out. Like, if they win out, people will be shocked, but then they'll be like, wait.
What's their schedule?
Very winnable schedule, right? So next week they host the 49ers.
Winnable, yep.
Then they host the Eagles.
Winnable.
And then they're at the Giants.
Wow. So what do they got, four wins?
And if they win out, they're 7-9.
Wow.
And we've been talking that 7 wins can win the NFC East.
I wonder what their odds are to win the NFC East right now.
I don't know, but
maybe I'll throw it.
Washington's got the Seahawks, the Panthers, and then at the Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
I think 2 winnable games there. And if they finish with the same record as the Cowboys, they do it. So the Giants have, I think, have the toughest schedule of remaining. I think the Eagles, I know the Eagles got Arizona. And then after that, I believe they have so the Eagles have at Arizona, at Dallas, close against Washington. So that's some tough games too. But the Giants face Cleveland, Baltimore, and then Dallas. So the Giants have 2 really tough games.
Yeah. Before, and then a winnable one.
Yeah, and then a winnable one. Whereas everyone else has, the Cowboys have 3 winnable games, the Eagles have 2 winnable games, and the Washington football team have 2 winnable games. The Giants have 1.
Yeah.
So tough sledding for the Giants, but that's where they are.
All right. Anything else to discuss before we do some questions?
No.
Okay. Let's see what we got here.
I just remember something before we get to questions. And I wanted to share, I shared this with you, but I wanted to share it with everyone. Remember Odell did that interview last week?
Mm-hmm.
Where he talked about Eli Manning and
yes.
the Giants failing to build around Eli Manning. And it was an interesting thing. I mean, I think if Odell was trying to excuse himself from any blame with what went wrong from the Giants,
yeah,
I think that's sort of, it was sort of the wrong, he took the right approach because he brought up Eli Manning and then Giants fans love Eli Manning, but he talked about Pat Shurmur, right? Or indirectly talked about Pat Shurmur. Did you listen to that voice message that I sent you? I'm going to sort of ask you.
It was very long.
Right, so you're going to listen to it now.
Okay.
And I'm going to try to make it shorter than 8 minutes, but
yeah.
Anyways, so you and I, we've spoken to a lot of people that were very close to the team, and some cover the team, some are around the team. And they told us some of the stuff that went on with Odell and Pat Shurmur and where the bond sort of broke. So I reached out. Somebody I knew actually followed my page that was close to Odell, and we exchanged some DMs and exchanged numbers, and we talked. And I sort of reached out to that person for the first time. And that person no longer followed me, by the way. I told them to unfollow me because they allowed me to go public with this thing. And I didn't want people to start looking up who this person was.
Can I ask what the relation is?
No.
Okay.
No, you can't ask that.
Okay.
Sorry.
Motion denied.
Yes. Basically, what they told me was, hey, look. If everyone remembers, Pat Shurmur gets hired, right? And Pat Shurmur flies out to California. It was for UCLA and USC's pro days in the beginning of March. I think it was the beginning of March. Pat Shurmur goes out to UCLA and USC He spends time in Southern California. Giants ownership and the front office are trying to at that time, John Mara's was looking for a head coach that could really tap into Odell, right? Tap into him on and off the field, kind of get a get him to buy into what he's saying. It was big for John Mara in interviews to kind of get a coach that could understand Odell and hit Odell where Tom Coughlin and Ben McAdoo couldn't, right? If we go back, we can remember that. And, you know, obviously the contract situation was coming up, and John Mara wanted to see, hey, can I make this investment? Is this something, can I do this right now? So anyways, he sort of urged Pat Shurmur to go out to California, go out and spend time with Odell. And Pat Shurmur did that, met with Odell. It wasn't like a Mike McCarthy and Jerry Jones thing where McCarthy spent the night at Jerry Jones' house. They didn't have slumber parties. But they spent some quality time together, right? And they got to know each other, and it was, from what this individual told me, it was great. Odell really, really liked what Pat, you know, he knew about Pat Shurmur through Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen, and he liked a lot of the things that Shurmur did as OC with the Minnesota Vikings, and he was really all in on the offense, and they got to know each other, and they sort of connected. Pat Shurmur felt the same way. Pat Shurmur goes to the pro day, spends time with Odell, comes back to, and before he comes back, Odell says, look, this is a business. I want to be a New York Giant for the rest of my career. But, you know, I got to get paid. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've proven I'm one of the top receivers. I got to get paid. I got to get that assurance because what happened to me last year, I need to get my money, right? And Pat Shurmur understood. He said, I'll support you 100%. You know, if you buy into what I'm selling, you buy into what I'm trying to build here, this will work. And they both had an agreement that Odell would show up to OTAs, to the offseason voluntary workouts, and it would show that Odell's buying in, and it would sell the fan base and sell ownership that this is going to work. Pat Shurmur comes back, tells John Mara, look, this guy's all in. Let's get this thing done, right? Let's get him signed long term.
Yep.
Sort of indirectly, that's what he was telling him, like, this guy wants to be here for a while. OTAs come around, the offseason workouts, Odell shows up. Training camp comes around. About right before training camp, Giants start to get serious about signing that long-term deal, getting that long-term deal done. At that time, sort of the trade talk stuff had sort of died down. Remember at that time, it was like, are the Giants going to trade Odell, right? That was a big thing. There was that video that popped up with him in that Paris hotel room with the white substance and all that. All that stuff popped up, and there was talks about trades, blah, blah, blah. Anyways, July comes around, and I hope everyone's still with me. You know, Giants start to get serious. John Mara starts to get serious at the start of camp. Throughout the early portions of camp before the preseason, we see Odell's agent a couple times at the Giants training camp, and we're like, okay, this thing is going to happen. Somewhere along the lines, the expectation was the deal was going to get done before the start of preseason, which was the first 10 days of camp, I believe. And there was some holdups there, and that had to do a lot to why the GM was coming to the training camp a lot. And preseason comes around. And remember, Odell had said, hey, look, I don't want to take the field without an extension because what happened to me last year in the preseason really ruined my season, right? Remember that Cleveland preseason game?
Yes.
Injures his ankle. So Pat Shurmur agrees in March that they were going to get something worked out and Odell would be able to get his money before stepping on the field. Preseason comes around, and this is sort of what you and I heard with Pat Shurmur trying to get Odell to play in a preseason game before the contract is done. Same thing I heard from this person, that Odell was sort of taken back by it because he said, hey, you know, we talked in March and, you know, like, you're supposed to have my back. I had your back. I didn't hold out. I came. I did what you asked me to do. And that's where sort of the relationship split. Now, the contract still got done, but it got done, if you remember, at August 28th,
mm-hmm.
which was the end of camp, end of preseason, right before the regular season start. But that really sort of, not broke, but it really put that relationship on life support because there was betrayal going on there. And obviously this is from Odell's camp. We don't know what Pat Shurmur said or didn't say or what happened, but Giants start slow. Odell does that ESPN interview, and then, you know, the rest is history on what happens with Odell's tenure with the Giants. But that, when Odell talked about how he felt betrayed and he felt like Pat Shurmur tried to sabotage his career, this is sort of the stuff where it started, and then throughout the season how it got worse and worse, especially after that interview that he did with Josine Anderson on ESPN.
And Lil Wayne.
And Lil Wayne, yeah. That was bad.
Yes. Bad look. Bad.
Yes. So that's what happened. And you don't have to believe me, but I just wanted to share that with people because...
We have nothing to gain by lying.
No. I'm not trying to play reporter. It was just an interesting story that was told to me, and I wanted to share with you guys. And it sort of made sense from the stuff that you and I heard when we had conversations with people outside this podcast, too.
Yes.
Yeah. And I don't want to put that person's name out there.
And that's very fair.
Because we don't know if he ever went public, or he or she ever went public. But anyways, that was that.
All right. Some insight.
Yeah.
We love to do this. All right. Should we do some questions?
Yes.
All right. So this isn't really a question. This is from Nick. Nick has been editing our podcast recently. Be a real shame if you mention the blog that's going up tomorrow about potential replacements for Daniel Jones. So Nick is writing a blog about potential Daniel Jones replacements if the Giants do decide to move on. And I haven't read it really. I think it's still being worked on. But based on my initial conversations with Nick, his idea was not really along the lines of draft, but quarterbacks that may either be free agents or maybe moving on from their current teams that might make sense for the Giants. Is there anyone out there that could be out there that is a clear upgrade from Daniel Jones that you would want to bring in any capacity?
No.
And I'm not saying that this is the right thing, but the two quarterbacks that are top of mind for me, Matt Stafford and Matt Ryan, just because of where their respective teams are, where their teams are going to be picking in the draft, and the likelihood that their careers may be over with their current teams. I'm not saying if I agree or disagree. I've always actually been a big fan of Matt Stafford. I think he's tough as shit. We always praised Eli for his Iron Man streak and for never, he got hurt a few times, thankfully at opportune times, but Matt Stafford is tough as shit. And in my opinion, has always been very underrated and on some teams that have been very, very bad. But listen, if you're asking me, it's draft or bust. You don't want to be kicking the can down the road. You want your future guy. And you just got to keep taking shots. If you move on from Daniel Jones, you just keep taking shots in the draft until you find a young guy that makes sense and works.
Well, the thing is, I don't think the term move on is going to happen. I think as bad as he's been, I think they're going to give him another year regardless what happens with the front office. But in terms of the two guys you mentioned, they're not going to be able to get those guys without a trade because the contract situations for both those guys are just really, really tough. I know Matt Ryan's contract is he's got, I think, a $50 million dead cap hit next year. Matthew Stafford, I think, has a $24 million dead cap hit. So I don't even think that those guys are going to be moved. But if they are, it's going to cost draft picks and a lot of salary cap space. And I don't think the Giants are going to be in that position to do that. To me, like you said, if there's somebody in the draft you like we talk about, then you obviously that could be an option, but I don't see them going to free agency. Or maybe they try to get in a more capable backup quarterback, something like that. But I don't see this isn't a situation where I think it's going to be a major money spent on a quarterback or even them moving up for a quarterback. I just don't see that right now. Maybe if someone falls to them and they really, really like him and Daniel Jones, they like him more than Daniel Jones, then yeah, I could see that. But I don't see this as an offseason where the Giants will move up for a quarterback or spend big money on a quarterback.
All right, well, then let me go to this question from TJ.
Yeah.
If Zach Wilson is there, do you think the Giants take him? And where does Danny go? So now I get your point of view. You don't think the Giants move on from Daniel Jones after this season?
No.
How do you reconcile that, though, with everything that we've heard about Joe Judge? If Joe Judge has not seen enough, and Joe Judge was not here when Daniel Jones was drafted, what do you make of that? Everything that we've heard is that he is the dude. And when I say he is, I Joe Judge is the dude, and he.
Right, everyone is scared of him, right? Like we saw, we read that. We had Zach on last week.
Who
read
yeah.
That piece, like everyone is doesn't want to cross Joe Judge. I don't think Joe Judge is ready to move on from Daniel Jones. I think that he inherited him, obviously, but given Jones is still on a rookie contract, fairly cheap, and I think you and I both agree that the main problem is Jason Garrett's offense. I think that would be the issue number one. I just think that Joe Judge would want to see him with another offensive coordinator before making that decision. I think, you know...
Then let me go on the record and say this. If that's the case, and they say... Because I'm not a believer in Daniel Jones. I mean, you said it before. He's regressed. I never thought he was the dude. I never thought he was the correct pick. If they decide, all right, let's run this back with a new offensive coordinator, let's see what happens, I can guarantee you that the Giants are going to regret that for 10 years if they skip on some of the guys in this quarterback draft class.
Well, I don't think they'll skip out. Look, I think that they will. I think they will look at the quarterbacks. I think if Daniel Jones finishes the way you think he's going to finish the season, they will look at quarterbacks, right? Whether or not they take one will be depending on whether or not they like him, like that prospect as much as they like Daniel Jones. But there's other factors to this. I mean, you spend the number six pick on a quarterback and you move on him from 2 years without really seeing, you move on him from 2 years without getting...
Look at the Cardinals.
Yes, that is true. But the Cardinals have the number one pick in the draft.
Then that's fair.
You know what I'm saying?
If
they had the number one pick in this draft, they would have taken Trevor Lawrence, no ifs, buts, or ands about it.
Of course.
Trevor Lawrence would have been their guy. But they don't have the number one pick. They're going to be picking, you know, if they don't win the division, they're going to be picking either in the back end of the top 10, 8, 9, 10. Maybe they'll get to 7. I don't know. But to me, it's just.
I think they could get to 6 or 7.
I mean, I know Dallas is ahead of them, Philly's ahead of them, Detroit, Carolina's ahead of them, but
Detroit, Carolina, and Atlanta are the three that are sort of question marks.
And those teams are 4-9, right?
Yeah, where like I've been thinking about this a lot today. Where Carolina, like that's a team that, I mean, Teddy Bridgewater is obviously not the solution long term. He's signed for 2 more years. They can get out of his deal after 2021 with very, very little dead cap. So
absolutely, he's a bridge quarterback.
The bridge, Bridgewater. Yeah. Yeah. So they could very easily take a quarterback and sit him or play him over Teddy Bridgewater and make Teddy Bridgewater the backup again. Atlanta, unable to move on from Matt Ryan, they could take a project like a Zach Wilson or a Trey Lance. And Dallas, well... Dak's going to want to get paid. What are they going to do there? I think that they work it out with Dak, but...
Yeah, they're not taking a quarterback.
But then that opens the door for if they're not taking a quarterback. Okay, hello, San Francisco. What do you want to move up?
Look, I think that if the Giants really, really, really love a guy, they'll take him. But...
Do you really think that, though? Because yes. Ben McAdoo really, really, really liked Patrick Mahomes.
Joe Judge is not Ben McAdoo. It's a different situation now.
Now it is because they fucked it up so many times.
Yeah. Look, I don't want to go to that. I don't want to bring up that nightmare.
What's going to happen if they decide to fire Jason Garrett midseason or take away his play calling duties? We're going to get Ben McAdoo's fat cousin-in-law. Freddie Kitchens calling plays.
Do you want him to see call plays?
No.
You don't think he could be a better play caller than Jason Garrett?
He was terrible for the Browns.
I mean, what do you have to lose, though? I'm not saying for a whole year. Like, I think that if, well, there's 3 games left, but if they would have fired Garrett, I don't think you got nothing to lose seeing if Kitchens can call plays.
I guess, but at this point, you're not going to fire Garrett.
No. I think Garrett's going to finish the year. But with the quarterback, man.
I love Zach Wilson.
I haven't watched much of the BYU.
Love.
I'll watch the quarterbacks. I'll have time to do that, but I haven't really dived into them as much.
He makes it look so easy.
There's gonna be a lot of quarterbacks. There's a guy from Florida. There's
Trask.
There's Mac Jones coming out.
Yeah, dude. I mean,
there's a lot.
We and this is going to be like, we're going to look back in 5 years and it's going to be quite funny, I think, to look at how some of these other teams treated their quarterback situation. Because right now, I mean, in a vacuum, if you were to be like, hey, do you want Tua or do you want Mac Jones? I'm taking Mac Jones. And if you look at, yeah, absolutely. And you look at the Dolphins with taking Tua over Herbert. I mean, I know it's early, but that's looking like the wrong choice.
Well, let me ask you this. I don't know if you have time, but tell me all the teams right now that you think could take a quarterback.
Could take a quarterback. Hold on. Let me pull up the current draft order.
Yeah. Because, I got it right here.
Okay.
Jets, they're going to take a quarterback, right?
The Jets are taking a quarterback. Yeah, so I got it pulled up, right? So right. Jets, they're going to take Trevor Lawrence. Jacksonville, who knows what they're going to do. Maybe they take Fields, but regardless, they're taking a quarterback. Cincinnati, no. Chargers, no.
No.
Dallas, but then, but again, that even though they're not taking a quarterback, if you're a team targeting a quarterback, such as Carolina, when you start to worry where a team like the Chargers and the Cowboys, who need a shitload of pieces, might trade back.
Absolutely, but I'm talking just in terms of the teams that you could see taking.
Fine. So Cincy at 3, no. Chargers at 4, no. Dallas at 5, no. Carolina at 6. Atlanta at 7, yes.
Yes. So 6. So that's 1, 2.
Miami
three,
at 8,
four.
No.
Okay.
Philly,
nine,
no.
Philly. Okay. Giants, 10.
Possible.
Okay, so that's 5 teams right there. 4 ahead of the Giants. Now let's look at that other bottom half. Let's keep going. Detroit,
yes. San Francisco, absolutely.
Yes.
Not a doubt in my mind they're taking a quarterback.
Denver, yes. Minnesota, yes.
I don't know if Denver would. And not because I think Drew Lock is good or anything. I just, Elway's a wild card. I don't think so. Minnesota, maybe.
Yes, yes. Chicago, I could see them taking a quarterback. New England, yes, I could see them taking a quarterback. You ready for a surprise? Las Vegas, yes, I could see them taking a quarterback.
I don't know, man. I've been watching a lot of Raiders this year, and
Gruden is a wild card.
He is. I mean, their defense is horrendous. I don't think Derek Carr has been a problem this year, but whatever. Yes, wild card, sure. So
of that top 7,
we didn't think Green Bay was going to take a quarterback last year. So
no. That's why I'm sort of so of that top 17. There's about, you know, we about half of those teams that we could see them taking a quarterback.
Sure.
So there could be a run on quarterbacks in the top 10.
I think there will be.
And if that's the case, and the Giants are in that position.
Bro, if Zach Wilson goes to the 49ers, that team is going to be a problem.
You really like the Zach Wilson guy.
Dude, just watch. Go watch some All 22 of Zach Wilson. And this is what pisses me off about the quarterback analysis of college. Everyone's like, oh, but he's always protected. He's got a million seconds, this, that, and the other. Listen, a million quarterbacks are afforded that luxury in college. Look at everything else. Look at the arm strength. Look at the precision. Look at the deep ball ability. Look at the decision making. All of that you can evaluate independent of the pieces that they are surrounded with at the college level and the competition level that they are facing. Zach Wilson is going to be very, very good.
And you might be right in terms of the draft, bigger picture, with the amount of the quantity of quarterbacks, I think this is not going to be a case where teams are going to stay put and let the quarterback come to them.
No.
I think if they like a guy,
they're going to get him.
To go and get him. Yeah. So there's going to be a lot of moving up and down.
Absolutely. All right. So there's a bunch of more Jones-related questions. People asking me about Zach Wilson because I tweeted about him yesterday. This is not worded properly, but basically, who are the marquee free agents that you believe the Giants need to look into? This person suggested Curtis Samuel and Joe Thuney.
Curtis Samuel and Joe Thuney. I like, you know who I like? I think would do well. I like Corey Davis.
Yeah, a lot of people talking about Corey Davis. I'd be a fan of bringing him in.
I would rather get a guy like Corey Davis for like 10, 15 million a year than go and give a long-term deal to like Allen Robinson or a
King. I would agree with that.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I just don't feel comfortable giving those type of guys $20 million a year or even trading, like, a high draft pick for them and then giving them that big contract. I don't feel comfortable with that. I would like to get like a Corey Davis. He mentioned a Curtis Samuel. Those are the type of receivers I think the Giants would have to go after. I would like them to go after.
A lot of people asking us this question, and I really have no clue because it's a very tough one to answer. If they move on from Garrett, who are you bringing in as offensive coordinator? It's really tough.
I got an answer for you.
Okay,
I
go ahead.
One guy in my mind right here. If this man doesn't become a head coach, I think it's a perfect hire. Jim Caldwell.
Okay.
I just love Jim Caldwell.
Okay.
Leader. He's everything I think Joe Judge likes in coaches. Respected guy around the league. Guy is great with quarterbacks. Good offense. You can look it up. You saw his success in Detroit. You're a big Stafford guy. To me, if he doesn't get it, he should get a head coaching job. But if he doesn't, that is the perfect candidate for me. I think fans would love him. Just a great offensive coordinator. Not one of those sexy names, young guys, not that. But he's just he's a coach, and he knows offense, and he knows how to work with quarterbacks. To me, that's the perfect coach, I think, and players love him.
All right. We got a bunch of other questions, but they're mostly Dan Jones.
A lot of those
Jones.
Questions I saw, you can't answer them until the end of the year.
Yeah, exactly. And we're also over an hour at this point, so I figured we could just wrap it up right here.
Yes. All right. Do you think the Giants are going to beat the Cleveland Browns on Sunday?
No.
No?
If the Browns had won last night, I would say...
Really?
Maybe. Because that's a textbook letdown spot. If they come off a high like that against the Ravens, now they might be out for blood, in my opinion.
I think the Giants win on Sunday.
Wow.
In a low-scoring game.
Pretty sure you said the opposite earlier in the podcast.
What did I say earlier in the podcast?
I thought you said they were going to lose.
No, I said I don't have confidence in them winning. But because I think that they're because I picked them to win the division, I got to stick to my original prediction and not get caught up in one game.
Okay.
So I think that they will win on Sunday against Cleveland, and we'll go from there. It's a week-to-week season in the NFL. One week, on top of last week, I had people telling me you got to apologize to Dave Gettleman.
There was a lot of that.
I'm like, what? Are you crazy? And now this week, everyone's like, yeah, Dave Gettleman is the problem. And it's like, listen, it's a week-to-week season. But I think the Giants, I keep telling everybody this is different. Something is different about this team. This coach is different. I think this is a game that the Giants come back. They have a good showing. It's going to be low scoring. Both teams are going to try to limit the workload on their quarterback, take pressure off on the football. I'm going to say Giants win 19-16.
Wow.
Game-winning kick, Graham Gano.
I would love to see that. One? Yeah, I love
like
that.
Second straight week, Cleveland losing on a game-winning
kick. I'm Graham Gano's biggest fan. Yes. Yeah, I think the Giants lose. Probably a low-scoring game. I agree with you. All right. I think that's it. Let's wrap it up. You can follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. iTunes, Audio Boom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. Rate us 5 stars. Leave a kind review. That's it. We'll talk to you guys next week after the Browns game.
Peace. All right, I'm going to stop this recording.